Welcome to Third Tuesday Conversation, a monthly podcast that focuses on the ministry of faith formation with children, youth, and families in ELCA congregations. Our goal is to engage in conversations that strengthen and empower our ministry world. This podcast is produced by the ELCA Youth Ministry Network. I'm Danica Olson.
I'm Elizabeth Pedersen.
And I'm Adam Butler. On today's podcast, we are rolling out another of our conversations from the extravaganza back in January. This conversation today with Jeff Chu. This recording came after the first of his two keynote presentations on the main stage at the E. You can actually go back and watch those keynotes on the network website. That may be helpful for you to listen to or to watch before listening to this podcast or after, since this conversation we had with Jeff was kind of informed by those talks that he gave at the E. So without further ado, here is our conversation with Jeff Chu from the Extravaganza.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to Third Tuesday Conversation. We are recording live at the ELCA Youth Ministry Network Extravaganza in Jacksonville, Florida.
Yeah, let's hear it. Woo! Studio audience.
Woo! We have a live studio audience in the exhibit hall. It's very exciting. We are here this afternoon with Jeff Chu, who is one of our main stage speakers this weekend. He spoke to us this morning and got a standing ovation, which was wonderful, and spoke a lot of true things right into my heart that rang true and were beautiful. So we are so excited that you have agreed to come and talk to us on our podcast, our little podcast. So thank you for being here.
Thanks for asking.
Yes, and so I'm here. I'm Elizabeth. I'm here with Danica and Adam, and as I said, Jeff. And, you know, this morning when you were talking, I was, first of all, blown away, but also asking, so who is this guy?
Fair.
Fair. So can you tell us who you are?
Yeah, so I've been a journalist for a long time. That is the world that I come from. I was at Time Magazine, and then at Condé Nast, and then at Fast Company. And then a few years ago, God started doing weird, twisted, annoying things, and now I'm in seminary.
Oh, sounds like a great lead-in.
It's quite a
seminary
pathway.
It is. It is. There was this night I went out to dinner with my husband, and I was really struggling at work. I was not happy with the kinds of stories that I was getting to do, because I went into journalism to tell stories about normal people.
Yeah.
I've never been interested in famous people or celebrities or political leaders. I've always loved like being in someone's barnyard and talking to them about the things that they do, or being at someone's kitchen table and finding out about their ordinary lives, which are never ordinary.
Right.
Ordinary lives are
right.
Always extraordinary. Every family is dysfunctional. Every family
yep.
is a soap
Truth.
Opera.
Yes.
And I wasn't getting to do that work.
Mm-hmm.
So we were out one night for dinner, and I said to Tristan, I think I almost have a plan. And he said, do you want to talk about it? And I said, nope. He's like, okay. So you need to know that we don't share passwords for devices. We don't share a computer. And he paused, and he said, okay, I only have one thing to say, and then we don't have to talk about it. He said, I'm not going to be a good preacher's wife. And I was like, shit, where did that come from?
Oh, my gosh.
How do you know?
Because I had been secretly Googling seminary for like 9 months, but I had never once mentioned it to anyone.
Wow.
And so it's been kind of a weird journey. We set up a discernment team. We're pretty slow people. So that was over a year of talking to pastors, professors, people who know this world about whether it was right for us. And we're doing okay.
Wow.
It's been good.
When did you start?
So I started in the fall of 2016 at Princeton Seminary. I'm not Presbyterian, but we were living in New York at the time. So it made sense for the commute.
It's going well. What do you think of seminary?
So on the record, officially, seminary is great, right?
Yes.
So great.
But really?
So great.
I I think it has the pain and the messiness and the ugliness and the competition and the depravity of the rest of the world. Hmm. Yeah. And it's frightening to me that some of my classmates are allegedly going to be pastors.
Preach.
And it's really encouraging that some of my classmates are going to be pastors. Mm-hmm. There are some wonderfully gifted people I get to learn from. And then others, I'm like, please, Lord, please, God, you are there. God, please.
Hello.
Yes. Please.
Test 1, 2.
So you are enrolled at Princeton, and I know that you are connected with a really unique program there called Farminary. And I think people need to hear about it. So can you tell us a little bit about what that program is doing and why it's so unique in the seminary world?
So honestly, the Farminary is the reason I haven't dropped out.
Huh.
It's a 21-acre farm where the Farminary project director, Nate Stuckey, who grew up a Mennonite farm boy in Kansas, he says the main thing we grow is soil. I would say our secondary crop is sermon illustrations. And then third, we have a small CSA for 10 families from May to October. And the whole point is to use it as a classroom, as a space in which we can, for instance, understand the pastoral stories in the Bible on a much deeper level than you could if you were sitting in the classroom. Mm. One of our professors, Liz Bloch-Smith, who's a Jewish archaeologist, she taught Society and Culture of Ancient Israel last fall. And for that, we got two goats. And the students in that class had to take care of goats. And part of the point of that is, how are you supposed to understand life in ancient Israel if you have no sense of the responsibility of caring for these creatures who would have been in your home?
Huh.
So they split up the rota, and in the mornings they would come and clean out the water and refresh the feed, make sure they had straw, make sure they had hay. Yeah, it was a gift.
Wow.
So a lot of it is metaphor, but some of it's real.
I mean, they're real goats.
Real goats.
Real goats.
I love those goats so much. And no, we didn't eat them. They went home. They went back to their farm. And by home, I didn't mean eternal home. I meant real farm. Yeah. Home.
Thank you
they
for clarifying.
They went to be with Jesus.
That's but tricky. They went to their home in the farm upstate.
Right.
But that is very biblical, that it's metaphor but also real. I mean, so much of the story of the Bible is informed by these very real things that people did, but we now get to reap the benefits of this beautiful metaphor that they've created for how God interacts with us and how our stories connect with the larger God story. And so I think that's neat that it's, yes, some of it's metaphor, but some of it's real. And going back to that is such an interesting way of doing seminary, and really, I think, a beautiful way of connecting us to this work that we're doing, not only from that theoretical, theological deal, but that feet on the ground in real life, this is what's happening, and it can inform both of those things.
I mean, when you think of how few Americans actually have a connection to rural life now and how few work on farms, you realize how impoverished we are in terms of our understanding of Scripture.
Totally. Mm-hmm.
Because that was an agrarian society. Psalm 23 is completely sanitized because we don't actually understand what it means to take care of sheep.
Huh.
I only realized this a couple years ago when I read this book called The Shepherd's Life. Written by a British man named James Rebanks. And his family has lived on the same land for about 600 years. Wow. And they're sheep farmers. Mm-hmm. And when I read this book, he chronicles what it means to take care of sheep, how messy it is, what it feels like to have to put down a lamb, or when a lamb dies, or when a mother dies, or things get infected, or what a lost sheep actually means. What does it physically mean to go after a lost sheep?
Hmm.
And we don't know what that means.
No.
We don't know at all. And so we just read these poems in the Bible and, oh, isn't that pretty? It's actually not that pretty. It's actually really gory and ugly and miserable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And smelly.
Smelly. Smelly is key.
Yeah. But the beauty comes with how God meets us in that messy, and that becomes that that becomes this story of hope and redemption that the people of Israel connected with.
I think it's even more beautiful because there is that mess.
Yeah. Yep.
So, as you were speaking this morning, I was wondering about you, and I have had a thought that I wonder if it connects with you. And as you were telling the truth, I thought, you know, he seems like he is a person who understands and sees that all the people around you are dying, and they're not willing to admit that they are, you know, that like real life is happening, and as you say, you wanted to tell the stories of real people and understand real people, and we're not all in touch with our realness ourselves, you know, that like we go around and live our lives the way that we think the world. The way that we think the world wants us to live our lives. Mm-hmm. And so I wonder if that connects with you at all, that like you look around and you know that there's more to people than they're showing. And like does that, what do you think?
I think one of the privileges that we enjoy in the West, in a country like the US, because of the alleged wealth we have, is the ability to pretend.
Yeah.
And that's really dangerous. Early in my career, I did a lot of reporting in Africa, in sub-Saharan Africa. One of my favorite subjects that I ever wrote about, he just died this past week. It was a Zimbabwean musician named Oliver Mutukudzi. And I went to hang out with him in Zimbabwe. I had to sneak into Zimbabwe because the government wasn't giving journalist visas then. Mm. And he was recording with a choir of AIDS orphans. Hmm. Those kids, as they were standing in this hut that was converted into a makeshift recording studio in 90 degree weather in rural Zimbabwe, there was no pretense. Hmm. How can you have pretense when you've lost your parents, when you're not sure where your next meal is going to come from? I'm not trying to glamorize poverty or objectify it at all. But the reality is they did not have the luxury of pretending. Yeah. They can't look at their lives and say it's anything other than what it is. And I think we can, and we do. And it's frightening because it allows us not to see the risk that we're in. Mm-hmm. It allows us not to see the spiritual disease that we let fester. And I'm indicting myself here as much as anyone, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so then now you're talking to people in youth ministry, you're at a youth ministry conference. Like, what does this mean for how we do ministry? Like, what is ministry? What is it supposed to be? What are we doing? Do you know?
I don't know.
Tell us, please.
Yes. We don't know either.
Good.
Adam's ordained, I'm not.
I do have the magic pixie dust, as I'm reminded by my co-hosts very frequently.
I have sawdust.
I somehow have been given some sort of knowledge above and beyond all you minions. And my answer to that question is also, I don't know. So there you go.
End of
stuff
podcast?
You already
end,
knew.
Look, I think the best approximation I can come up with is just being willing to come alongside people wherever they are and remind them that God loves them.
Yeah.
If that is not a part of ministry, then I want nothing to do with your ministry.
Yeah. Mm.
If it's a ministry from above, right, where they're talking down at you, or even if it's a ministry from below, if they're shouting at you and the love's not there, I don't think that's ministry.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's a thread that is obvious through your life and the work that you're doing about story. Obviously, coming from being a journalist and wanting to tell people's stories, In your talk today, you were talking about youth ministry and your longing for someone who is just willing to receive your story and then also the encouragement for us to study our own story, to identify and uncover those things that are true to us. And it sounds to me like that's a good basis for our direction in terms of ministry, that loving and knowing people is about uncovering and identifying those stories about ourselves and about other people, and being willing to receive them from others as well. That I think that kind of gets us to that goal of love and I don't know, redemption, reconciliation with other people. I mean, that has to be kind of a thread for you, or kind of the way in which we might do ministry is that story piece.
The story is important, and the interdependence of our stories. Mm-hmm. Another lie I think that is pretty common in America and in the American church right now is this notion of independence and individual faith. Mm-hmm. I'm not a big fan. The culture I come from, Chinese culture, is very collective. Mm-hmm. We care about the implications of our actions on our families mm-hmm. and on our communities, almost to a fault, right? It's debasing the individual in favor of the collective. But I think there's something to be learned from that collective care, because there's no such thing as a self-made man, and there's no such thing as a self-saved Christian.
Right. Mm.
It doesn't exist. So understanding the ways in which our stories are intertwined,
yeah,
and understanding the ways in which they're intertwined with God's grander narrative, I think, for me, that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
So what do you... Are you starting to think about what happens?
Bad question. Stop. Stop asking. Stop. She's about to ask what I'm going to do next.
Sorry. Yep.
Do you remember that last semester of school when everybody, like, you hadn't graduated yet and everybody asked you
yes.
what you were doing next?
And did you enjoy that?
Did you enjoy that?
Don't ask.
I don't know.
I'm sorry, Jeff.
Can I use different language to ask a similar question?
That's what good journalists do.
That's right. So you said this thing in your talk today about life breath, that I think in the context of finding that thing that gives you life, that gives you breath. So maybe you. How about that? What is it that gives you that life breath? And what do you see? Where do you see God leading you to find? If it's not there to give you breath and maybe give other people breath in the process.
So what would really give me life breath right now is a winning lottery ticket.
Okay.
Me All too. Right.
Same. That would be super.
All right.
I specifically picked life breath. I don't know if any of you have seen Robert Alter's new translation of the Old Testament, of the Hebrew Bible. So in most of our Bibles, the word nefesh in Hebrew is translated soul. And he said that concept didn't really exist mm-hmm. for the ancient Jews, for the writers of the Hebrew Bible. And so he, in a lot of places, instead uses life breath, because there's a physicality to it in a way that the American church, at least, I find, has divorced body from soul. Yeah. And I've struggled so much with my body over my life for all different reasons.
Sure.
So to have life breath remind me that my body is a part of it and my spirit is a part of it is super important. Huh. As far as what that means, I'd love to have space to grow things. Like working at the farminery as a farmhand, look, my parents don't know what to make of the fact that they came all the way to a new country, invested in my education, and now I'm making $9.25 pulling weeds. This is not an immigrant parent's dream, and I get that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But I feel like I need some green space. I feel like I need stories. I feel like I'm called to something uncomfortable. I'm realizing that so much of my career has been spent appealing to the tastes of higher authorities. Hmm. When you're working in a magazine, it's all about what the editor-in-chief cares about.
Right. Yeah.
And I think I'm starting to realize that the people I have to care about are not seminary presidents or editors-in-chief or CEOs. There are people who are hurting, mm-hmm. and that's all I know right now.
How would you say, or I'm formulating my question as I'm asking, but this telling the truth piece and this connection to pain and hurt, how do you sort of break down the barrier in a way that invites people into actually telling the truth and to uncover what you invited us this morning, like to take a look at ourselves, really, not like just a passing glance or a I'm fine, the expected canned answer, but how do you see the work of ministry as this invitation to be in this discomfort and invite people to actually tell the truth about their lived experience?
I think part of it is the Christian framework of grace, right? That's a part of it. The other part of it I see written into how creation works. So at the farm, we spend a lot of time on our compost pile. And the compost pile has been, for me, the most unexpectedly magical place on the farm. It is the space in which you realize that nothing is wasted, that even the most disgusting, rotting, gross piece of vegetable, God is transforming into new life. So I got really annoyed. I'm not a huge John Calvin fan, even though I'm Reformed, and that's weird for me to reckon with. And I got really irritated when I was reading what Calvin, who is a lawyer, wrote about worms, because he compares dirty humanity to worms and says, like, we're even lower than worms, right? So you have this lawyer who's mansplaining something he doesn't really understand. Because if you look at the soil, you will see that a worm takes our crap, the stuff that we are wasting, the stuff that we throw out, and it poops out black gold, which is new soil that we grow with. And if you have that framework, that redemption written into creation, right, as the framework for which you receive your stories, that changes everything. There's always hope.
Yeah. Wow. So, why have we... Gosh, why have we taken that beauty, that realness? Like, why have we removed that from the actual good news? Like, or how is it that we speak good news into that when people see only poop? That the gross and the not good enough, the seen as waste. Where is, like, how did we get from point A to point B?
I mean, our sin is really bad, right?
Really bad.
Super bad.
We treat people terribly. And I think our ancestors in the faith had good intentions in focusing on that. But it's always been critiques of what we're doing wrong that have divided us. And when that is your driving motivation to identify what's wrong, that's going to shape the character of your church. We're always focused on what's wrong, not what's right.
For sure.
Sorry, it was just,
take some second.
You got to take a second?
No, you got to go.
All right. I'm building on another piece that you talked about. This morning, you used the word reckoning, and I'm wondering what reckoning. It's happening. There are really significant ways that it's happening in our country right now. What does reckoning look like into the future? And where do you see it taking us? In bad ways and in good ways. Because I think. So many people aren't ready for the reckoning, and that's not okay, but it's happening. So where is the reckoning taking us, and what does it look like?
I mean, reckoning is, I guess, the Christian word, right? The Christianese for it would be apocalypse, which is unveiling. It's a moment when we see things as they are and in a different light. And so, like with the Me Too movement, we see patriarchy being revealed for what we have known it has been, but we just haven't wanted to talk about and haven't wanted to acknowledge. So yeah, you can choose to participate in the reckoning, or it will choose you. And I think the reckoning for many of us is good news. I think for those of us who have been in some way on the margins, in some way stepped all over, the reckoning is a moment that we will welcome. Kind of like, I think God's judgment isn't something to be afraid of, because it's when God will make all things right, when God redeems all things. I'm not afraid of it. Maybe I should be.
Yeah. I'm working through a Bible study of Revelation with a group of old men on a Wednesday morning Bible study, and they are terrified of that God's judgment. And we just got to that piece in like the middle of Revelation, like 12, 13, 14, 15, of like this really, really scary judgment. And a lot of the conversation is around, are we part of this 144,000? Are we part of, like, and it's good, vulnerable conversation about our life, but it's focused on, are we in or are we out? And I'm scared to be on the outside, because, man, because we're scared of judgment and what that might mean, what the revelation of God's judgment might mean for us. And this reframing of judgment, like you said, it seems to be a more life-giving way of approaching it, and isn't as fearful. But it is fearful for those who absolutely do have the power.
But how can you buy into a God who is sitting up there with a cosmic tally sheet? And if you get 60% on the score sheet, you're in, and you get 59.9%
exactly,
you're out. I can't do that.
Yeah.
I can't believe
no
in that God.
Part of that.
But unfortunately, we land there. Even in a Lutheran theology that is antithetical to that, we still, as people kind of land there and worry about it, as if maybe all this stuff we believe, maybe it actually isn't right, and we're gonna land there anyway, which is terrifying if you're gonna adhere to it.
I got in trouble for a semester of seminary in one class because I kept saying in response to the professor's questions, God is a mystery. And she's like, you can't do that for the next 3 years and expect to pass. And I'm like, but that's the true answer. Like, I don't know how this whole salvation
right.
thing
yeah.
really works.
Right. Exactly.
Why can't we just say that instead of churning out 1,000-page books that come to no conclusion? Because you can't.
Or leading people to believe that it is something you can understand.
So clearly.
And giving them answers.
Clearly in the Bible.
That say, this is how it is. And we're completely ignoring the brains that God has given humanity. That this blind following, this absolute truth in, out, right, these lines, divisions, absolute truths, that because of fear, people go, I want to be on the right side of that one.
Right. And I get that. I want to be on the right side too, but I just don't think it's going to be scored the way we think it is sometimes.
Yeah. But you also are thinking critically about, what I'm pushing on is the, like, I want to be on the right side of that, so I'll just pretend. Like, just as we've started this conversation, the pretending of, like, yep, I believe everything I've ever heard. I read the Bible as absolute, literal truth. And even if I don't, I'm going to say I do because I want to be on the right
but
side.
But who are you fooling?
Right.
Like, what kind of a God is that if you can pull one over on that
yeah,
God?
Right?
Can I ask one last question before
we finish up?
I know we're getting near the end of our time. I just, because of the focus of this podcast and this extravaganza, I just was wondering if there was one thing, this is one thing that you could tell people who are working with young people about ministry that would be helpful to set us on maybe a different course, to disrupt the ministry that we're doing right now? What's with the audience of youth workers, what is something that you, Jeff Chu, can tell us to disrupt this ministry we're on and maybe send us in on a different course or a new direction?
What would it feel like the next time you showed up for youth group to step into the room knowing wholeheartedly and in every fiber of your being that God loved you more than you could ever know? That's it.
Beautiful.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
You're welcome.
Really appreciate it. This was wonderful.
We're so glad to have had this time with you, and we're grateful for those who've gathered to hear more from you. Can't wait to hear what else what other wisdom you'll share with us.
I'm all out. I'm done.
You're out.
You're
that's
done.
It. We'll just there's a mic in front of you. Do you want to drop it?
Good one.
Sorry.
Classic. Oh, that's good stuff. Thanks a lot, Jeff.
Yes, thanks for
Thank
time.
You.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
We hope you enjoyed that conversation. We have a few quick announcements and reminders. The network has a network app, and we strongly encourage you to download it. You can grab news, updates, prayer requests, have access to things like 3TC, and more. Download it today. Another way to access the network online is through the network's Facebook group, a great place to see what your colleagues are up to, have a place to ask questions, and seek advice. You also can share your experiences with others there as well. Search for ELCA Youth Ministry Network on Facebook. One last thing, be sure to look at martinslist.org. It's the network's resource sharing website. You might be looking for something, a curriculum, a retreat outline, a skit, or a story. Odds are somebody else might have already created it and uploaded it to Martin's List. You have something to share? You can upload your things there as well.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. We hope to put the word out with people in our CYF community about our podcast, so please share with your networks. New podcasts will be released on the third Tuesday of every month. Be sure to subscribe so you receive them as they come out. Your membership makes this podcast and the other things we do possible. If you're a member of the network, thank you. If not, we encourage you to join the network. Go to elcaymnet.org/benefits to learn more. And a special thanks to Paul Amlin, who produced this episode of 3TC. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.